have one case on a 130 docket. It's Columbia North Hills versus Alvarez. If the clerk will please announce counsel for us. All right, Mr. Benn. No, Ms. Benn. I'm sorry. I got you off the feed.
That's okay. American Express does the same thing. It thinks I'm a mister.
I run into that as well.
Do you?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Nicole Bunn. I represent Columbia North Hills. This is our second time in front of the court on a similar issue. When we were here before, this is a healthcare liability claim. When we were here before, it was on Appellee's amended expert report. At that time, this court determined that the report was insufficient as it pertained to the direct liability claim against the hospital. It dismissed the case. On a motion for rehearing, the court reversed its opinion and remanded the case to the lower court to determine whether a 30-day extension would be necessary on the newly identified issue of qualifications. However, I must point out that this court said in its memorandum opinion on rehearing, not only were the qualifications of Dr. Tuleman insufficient, but in the alternative, Dr. Tuleman's report also was deficient with respect to the standard of care issue. And I say that because it's important. Because one of the reasons that we're here today is because the trial court granted a 30-day extension. Appellees filed a new report by Mr. Brosseau. We believe that this was an error. The appellees had been given a 30-day extension. The statute only allows for one 30-day extension. By giving them another 30-day extension to file yet another report, and it didn't just say address the issue of qualifications by saying, I'm qualified. His report went into the meat of the matter and started talking about standard of care and breach of the standard of care, for which this appellee had already received their 130-day extension. So we contend that the trial court abused its discretion and did not conform to the statutory requirements by granting the additional 30-day extension. Even if this court feels that the court did not abuse its discretion, we have issues with Mr. Brosseau's report in and of itself. First of all, Mr. Brosseau, we believe, is not qualified to talk about the breach of the standard of care. He qualified in hospital administration. He's qualified to talk about the standard of care, but not the breach of the standard of care. If you look at his report, he says in his own report, an administrator has to rely on the clinical expertise of others to determine whether those in management and administration functions meet expectations. Appellees have cited the case of Hollingsworth out of the Dallas Court of Appeals and says, well, the Dallas Court of Appeals found Mr. Brosseau qualified on a similar issue, so this court should as well. If you look at the Hollingsworth case, however, it can be distinguished. In that case, there were two other expert reports on file, both by medical providers. And the court in Hollingsworth said, Mr. Brosseau is qualified to rely on those reports. And those other reports by clinical providers are sufficient. We don't have that in this case. The only other report in this case is by Dr. Tuleman. That is the only clinical report in this case. And this court has already determined that his report is insufficient with respect to the standard of care and breach thereof. Therefore, we think that Mr. Brosseau is not qualified to talk about breach of the standard of care. Even if this court believes otherwise, we think there are other problems with his report.
Now, his report, it relates to the direct liability claim only, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. But in order to, and he can talk about the standard of care, but even in his own report, he says to talk about how the nurses breached the standard of care, he would have to rely on the clinical expertise of others. And he does not have that expertise.
But cannot he not look at the other medical reports and the other expert reports?
He could if they were sufficient, but we contend that they are not sufficient with respect to the direct liability claim, and we would refer you to this court's own opinion saying that they're not sufficient with respect to the direct liability claim. With respect to the content of his report, standard of care and breach thereof, we would note in his own report he is talking about the policies and procedures for the hospital. Yet even in his own report he says, I haven't seen them. I haven't looked at them. I didn't review them. But I think they're wrong. And that is not what these reports are intended to do. They're intended to inform the court and counsel, why is there a case here? What is there about policies and procedures? What is there about the administrative aspect that was wrong, that was violated? And he doesn't do that. What he does is kind of a circular reasoning. Well, there was a bad outcome, so they must have been wrong. There was a bad outcome, there was a death, res ipsa, which is not allowed in Chapter 74. So they must have been wrong. It is very circular reasoning, and it is not sufficient. It does not establish how exactly the direct liability claim, a breach of the standard of care, was made.
But what about his statement in his report on failures to do proper assessment and reassessment and establish a chain of command and act as a patient advocate?
First of all, he has to rely on Dr. Tuleman to talk about that. And he himself cannot talk about that. He has to rely on them, and you've already said Dr. Tuleman's report is not sufficient with respect to the direct liability claim with respect to that. Second of all, he does not set out what really the standard of care is with respect to that and how the nurses actually breached it. So I think what you've read, and I think it's a fair question, but I think it's conclusory. And I think that his report is basically not setting forth the detail and specific breaches that are required by a Chapter 74 report. Not only does he, I think, fail with respect to the breach of the standard of care, but he is not qualified, and I don't think there's any argument to the contrary, to discuss causation. Now, this court, in its memorandum opinion on rehearing, did not address causation. In footnote 4, this court said, because Dr. Tuleman is neither qualified, and in the alternative, because his report is insufficient with respect to the standard of care, we are not going to address causation at this time. So the causation element is still out there. And our opinion is that Dr. Tuleman's report does not address causation with respect to the direct liability claim. His report is very, very conclusory. What his report says is that the failure of all defendants to provide surgery, which a hospital does not provide surgery, the doctors do, to provide medication, again, doctors order it, not the hospital, to properly monitor intraoperative blood loss, and that's not after surgery, that's during surgery. There's nothing to say what about the policies and procedures or the hospital's direct liability had to do with that, and to recognize the compromised status of the patient. Again, that's nursing judgment. What does that have to do with the direct liability claim of the hospital? He says these factors cause the death. They are not separated. They do not talk about the direct liability issues and are conclusory with respect to causation. And for those reasons, because a 30-day extension, we believe, should not have been granted, it had already been done once before, because Mr. Brosseau is not qualified to discuss the breach of the standard of care, we believe his report is insufficient to discuss those, the standard of care and breach thereof, and the causation issue, we would urge this court to find that Mr. Brosseau's report is insufficient and to dismiss the case, the direct liability claim against Columbia North Hills.
But what about the fact that the trial court's first order just specifically directed the deficiency to be addressed during the 30-day period? And then kind of had to cure the defect.
The only new defect from the order was qualification. If you take a look at the judge's actual order, it says, I apologize, let me pull it up here. Plaintiffs are required to submit an amended report breaking out specifically by name each defendant or group of defendant that specific elements relating to the standard of care, breach of the standard of care, and causation. So if you look at the actual language of the order, Dr. Tuleman's amended report should have addressed all of those elements with respect to the direct liability claim against the hospital. And in fact, this court found in the first time we were up here that it failed to do so with respect to the breach of the standard of care. Y'all waited with respect to the causation. The only new issue was qualification. And that was what was sent down to the trial court to decide whether or not to give them an opportunity to amend. But even if they had amended that single issue, all they really were allowed to say is, I'm Mr. Brousseau and I'm qualified. That doesn't solve the problems with respect to breach of the standard of care and standard of care for which they had already received an opportunity to cure.
Thank you, Ms. Bender.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, Mr. Lassiter.
May it please the court, I'm Lawrence Lassiter, representing the Appellees. Since I have a duty of candor to this court, I will not say that I am happy to see you again in this case. As I told Judge Wallace in the trial court, after your opinion on rehearing, when the Court of Appeals tells me I need to do something, I do my best to do it. The last time, in ordering and granting our motion for rehearing and issuing an opinion, this court gave us a roadmap. It identified the deficiencies that you found in Dr. Tuleman's report. This is what needs to be cured. We came to this court and asked for a rehearing and did what the Supreme Court told us to do in the Semlosky decision, where they said, if you're going to ask for an extension, you need to make a record whether you're going to get the extension or not. So we sent in our motion for rehearing the report of Mr. Brousseau, the same report that is at issue here, and said this is what we're going to file in the trial court if you grant rehearing. We believe these deficiencies can be cured, and here's how we're going to do it. You granted our motion, withdrew the prior opinion, and said to the trial court, take a look and see if they should get another extension. Now, appellant is trying to rewrite the history of the case. You all issued the opinion. I think you're familiar with it. You did not just identify Mr. Brousseau or the lack of Dr. Tuleman's qualifications in your opinion. You said Dr. Tuleman is not qualified to talk about administrative issues. And remember, that's what we're talking about here, hospital administrative issues. You said he doesn't appear to have sufficient qualifications to do that. And even if he did, he didn't properly explain what the standard of care was and how it was breached. When we moved for rehearing, we said that. Here's what you identified as the deficiencies. We think we can cure them. When rehearing was granted, you ordered that the trial court determine whether or not these new deficiencies that hadn't been identified by the trial court previously can be cured should an extension be granted. Our Supreme Court has told us that if it can be cured, you should have an opportunity to do it. The Chapter 74 is not intended to be a barrier to medical malpractice cases that have merit. It's supposed to weed out the frivolous cases. That's the purpose. Even Justice Heck has said that. So, we did what this court said we needed to do. Mr. Brousseau is an administrative expert. He goes on for a couple of pages explaining his expertise in hospital administration, which is the issue here. This is direct liability for the hospital for their administrative failures. A liability of the nurses, vicarious liability on the hospital based on the nurse's liability. You have already concluded in the prior opinion, Dr. Tuleman was qualified. Dr. Tuleman set forth the standard of care, the breach, and causation. That issue's already been decided. This is specifically related to administrative issues. Mr. Brousseau is a hospital administrator. He has administrative experience. He has everything that he needs to qualify to talk about what should have been done administratively, what policies, what procedures should the hospital have had in place, what should the hospital have done to train its people. That's what's at issue here. Mr. Brousseau is absolutely suited to that. The Hollingsworth decision over in Dallas, I don't know which direction that is from here, I think it's that way. The same arguments were raised, the same issue of whether Mr. Brousseau could talk about them. One of the things the Hollingsworth court did that I think is instructive is that they referred to this court's decision in Reed versus Granberry, which raised the same sort of issues about administrative issues. And the appellant there was arguing, well, you've got an administrative expert here, but you need to have a healthcare professional. You need to have a doctor to talk about these things. And this court said, no, there's nothing odd about an administrative expert, a layperson, talking about administrative issues. This court basically came to that conclusion when they said Dr. Tuleman couldn't do it. We need a hospital administrator, so we brought you one. And in the Reed decision, again relied on by the Hollingsworth Court, they recognized that a hospital administrator is in an interesting position because you've also got clinical issues, issues that you do indeed need a clinician to testify about and give opinions about, so that you can work those two things together. That's what the Hollingsworth Court found. We think this court should come to the same conclusion. And then when we get down to standard of care and breach, Mr. Brousseau goes through that and gives specifics. Now, counsel pointed out that he hasn't read the policy and procedures. They haven't been produced yet. We have a discovery. We had a discovery stay. We have the Chapter 74 discovery issue. This court had issued a stay. What Mr. Brousseau says is, if they have, they should have policies and procedures. They should have a chain of command policy, and here's what it should have in it. And if they do have one, and I can't tell you because I haven't seen it, then they didn't enforce it, because these are the things that they didn't do. In his report, Mr. Brousseau identifies who should have been contacted, how things should have been shot up the chain of command, what the nurses had a responsibility to do, and what the hospital should have made sure there was a policy in place for the nurses to do. Have a plan of care, know when to intervene. Now, the nurses aren't doctors. They're not making those medical decisions. But Mr. Brousseau says, from his administrative perspective, that the hospital has to make sure that its people know when to intervene and go up the chain of command and bring people in this case, to make sure that Mrs. Alvarez does not bleed to death. And that ties into the causation issue as well. This court has already looked at Dr. Tulleman's report on that. You have to have a doctor to give a causation opinion. The statute says that. There's no question. Appellant here complains that Mr. Brousseau didn't give a causation opinion and then says that Mr. Brousseau couldn't give one. And that based on either of those, this is insufficient. He can't give a causation opinion. That's what the statute says. The doctor has to do it, and Dr. Tulleman did it here. I'd like this court to consider a decision from last year, Stevenson versus Miller, 2011 Westlaw 3211199. There was no petition in that case. In that case, the surgeon, it's very similar set of facts. The surgeon failed to recognize the signs of postoperative bleeding, just like in our case. Failed to order some tests that should have been done. Plaintiff ended up having a heart attack and dying. So you had the surgeon in a number of positions, different defendants, just like in our case, different points in the time frame where it could have been stopped, where intervention could have prevented the death. Justice Livingston, you wrote the opinion in that case. You talked about the cumulative effect of the negligence of the various defendants and how we deal with that. One of the things you said in that case was we read the expert reports together. And when we do that, the alleged failure, this is a quote from that case, to ensure the timely administration of the proper medication was another omission in the chain that led to the exacerbation of Miller's hyperkalemia and ultimate cardiac arrest. I would also ask the court to look at the companion case in the Alvarez decision, which you also heard and wrote the opinion in the Washington decision. There, the defendant again tried to say, how can you single me out? And this court explained that there are multiple points where intervention could have been done. What Mr. Brousseau identifies, and he identifies them specifically, that these that the administrative procedures should have been in place to make sure that different people were notified, that there was a chance that someone further up the ladder would come in and get these doctors to do what should have been done, which is to take Ms. Alvarez back to surgery instead of letting her lay there for 8 hours, instead of administering more blood pressure medicine to up her blood pressure, which caused her bleeding to exacerbate. This is the same situation as literally the same situation as the other decision in the Washington appeal, the same situation in the Stevenson case. There are points where proper intervention could have stopped Alvarez from bleeding to death, and the issue here is the hospital's direct responsibility, its administrative responsibility. Mr. Brousseau is the one who can talk about that, and he does. He gives plenty of detail. And Dr. Tuleman's opinion, if you look at it, he did talk about the hospital. He did talk about the specifics of when the intervention should have happened and what should have happened. In fact, it's our position that this appeal shouldn't have been brought, because we did have your roadmap. We did have, for once, exactly what we were supposed to do, and we believe that we did that. We believe appellant is just delaying the case further. We're back here again. We still have no discovery. The case has been on file for 3 years. We've had two appeals now. And we think that, that frankly, you should deter that sort of behavior. That when this court says, here's what you're supposed to do, and when a party does that, it's a waste of everybody's time and an abuse of the system to go ahead and file yet another appeal when, in fact, we've done exactly what we were supposed to do. So that's our position. Not only should it be affirmed, but we believe that appellant should be sanctioned for it.
Did you ask for sanctions or attorney fees in the trial court?
We did not. We thought that would be the end of this. We filed our extension. We did what we were supposed to do. And now we're back here.
I would like to ask the question about going back to the beginning of your argument. If you have any authority that we could have considered or can consider the report of Dr. Broussard in the last appeal, when it had not yet been introduced in the trial court or filed in the trial court?
That's not the argument that we're making. In the previous appeal, this court said all we had was Dr. Tuleman's report. As with respect to on the motion for rehearing, is that your question?
Yes, I'm
okay.
Sorry.
As far as I know, when I file a motion, the court can look at the things that are attached to the motion. Counsel is correct that the court did not say, this report is beautiful. This is exactly what we wanted. That's why we're granting rehearing. The court didn't do that, and I'm not saying that the court did that. But what the Supreme Court advised in the Simlowski decision was whenever you're seeking an extension, and then the issue of whether you should or shouldn't have gotten an extension comes up, you need to be able to show that you could have cured the deficiency to complain on appeal that it was error not to give the extension. So it's just good practice that you make your record. And that's one of the things that I wanted to do. And I wanted to show the court also that the deficiency was curable. That was our position.
Okay.
It doesn't become part of that record.
All right, thank you, Mr. Lasseter. We'll have a rebuttal now, Ms. Dunn.
One thing I would like to address, and I think it goes to both the sanction aspect as well as the content of the standard of care and breach thereof aspect. Counsel is not involved in the trial aspect, as I understand it, just the appellate aspect, and I don't think he's meaning to be disingenuous with the court, but in fact there has been discovery in this case. There was written discovery, and we were happy to supplement the record if this court desires, but plaintiff filed requests for production where they asked for policies and procedures. And on January 12, 2010, we filed our answers. We filed objections, but subject thereto, we produced rules and regulations and bylaws. And these were not given to Mr. Brosseau to review. This court in Baylor All Saint versus the Martin said that discovery under 74.351S could include policies and procedures. In fact, if you take a look at that section, it says discovery with respect to written discovery goes to other documents pertaining to the claim, not just medical records, but other documents. Appellees had those other documents. And in fact, this court in the Baylor All Saint case said that the plaintiff has the burden to establish that discovery limitations have prevented him from satisfying the statute expert port requirements, and appellees have not done that in this case. There has been nothing in the record to say that they were prevented from pursuing, if these were not the records they wanted, from pursuing a motion to compel to obtain those records and or telling the court in their brief why they could not obtain those records and why they could not give them to Mr. Brosseau or why these were the wrong records or why these were not the wrong records. Nothing. And they have the burden of proof to do so. So with respect to the statement of no discovery, I will take serious issue with that. There has been written discovery. Our objections with respect to the scope of the question, not one of our objections said, oh, we're going to cite on 74, 351S and say you're not allowed to it. What we have cited to that section 4 is for depositions, because the statute clearly states that the discovery is limited to written discovery, not depositions. So we have relied upon that, and this court itself, in our last appeal, granted a stay with respect to their request for depositions. I hope I don't have to say anything more with respect to the request for sanctions or frivolous appeal. I do not believe that this is a frivolous appeal. There is an issue as to whether the 30-day extension should have been granted in the first place, because their report, their amended report, the one that they had previously been granted an extension for, was already done. And the statute clearly says one time. You get one time to try to cure the deficiency. The only new deficiency in this case was qualifications. It would not have cured the other deficiencies found by this appellate court in our previous briefing.
I have a particular question.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you file a response to both of the reasons?
Yes, we did. And but there was no, I think we requested oral arguments, but I believe it was denied.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the briefing's been done. I could talk to Philip Time. I'd love to do that, but I suspect you probably, unless you have a question for me, I'll respect the court's time and will say that we hope that the court finds that the report is insufficient, that the extension was not properly granted, and would deny the request for sanctions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bunn. Thank you, Mr. Lester. We appreciate all your briefing and your arguments today. Your case is now submitted, and you are excused. We'll adjourn court, please.